from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made in a doctor's office when a parent informs a doctor that his or her child will not be getting a vaccine. And there are many reasons that parents might make this decision. New York State is asking an important question now. Should parents be allowed to refuse vaccines for their kids at all? Three other states have greatly limited the reasons parents can refuse vaccines for their kids. According to the LA Times, California, West Virginia, and Mississippi have essentially limited vaccine refusal to medical reasons approved by a doctor. So saying that a vaccine is against our religion no longer flies in those states. What about New York? What rights do parents have on this? Our state legislature has seen a push and pull over vaccine refusal this year. In February, Assembly Democrat Tom Abenanti of Westchester sponsored a bill that would make it easier for parents to obtain exemptions for their children. That bill has not passed and is now in need of a new lead sponsor. And now there's a bill that would do the opposite. Assembly Democrat Jeffrey Dinowitz of the Bronx is sponsoring a bill that would eliminate religious exemptions for parents seeking to enroll their children in school. This hour, we'll explore where the law stands, where it might go next, and we will talk about vaccines in general. Let me welcome my guests for the hour. Dr. Jeffrey Weinberg is here. He's a pediatric infectious disease specialist at UR Medicine's Golisano Children's Hospital. And Dr. Weinberg, it's always nice to talk to you.
Thanks, Evan.
On the line with us is Patricia Finn. She is a vaccine rights lawyer. Her firm's a vaccine injury and exemption litigation firm based just north of New York City. And Patricia, nice to have you. Thanks for taking the time.
Oh, thank you. Nice to be here.
And I will say that in just a few minutes, we will expect the Assemblyman to join the conversation. Assemblyman Jeffrey Dinowitz is going to join the conversation coming up here, and we'll talk to him about the bill that he is sponsoring. Dr. Weinberg, I want to start with you and just with a broad general question. I know you don't have statistics in front of you. Occasionally, you run into families, parents who will cite religious reasons for not wanting vaccines for their children. That happens with some frequency, not very frequent. How often would you say?
It happens with some frequency. I think the statistics across the country are that at least 85% of pediatricians have had discussions with parents who wish to either delay or not vaccinate their children.
Yep.
This isn't always from religious reasons. Sometimes it's a fear or what's so-called philosophic or scientific objection. But I think there are data from our colleagues in Syracuse that were recently published in 2013 in the journal Pediatrics where they found in several counties across New York, across New York in general, and over the past 10 years, there was a doubling from about 0.2% to 0.5% of all children trying to enter school having religious objections. And in certain counties, the rate had gone up quite a bit, over 100%. In other counties, it hadn't. Now, this paper doesn't delineate it by counties. We have had an increase in Monroe County, but it looks like it's still on the order of decimal points of a percent.
Okay, so in other words, in the last decade,
so maybe a few out of 1,000.
We've seen a big jump in the last decade, but a big jump still doesn't constitute more than a fraction of a percent.
That's correct. But in some areas, such as Oregon, Washington, mm-hmm. California, it's Colorado, tends to be the western states, but they've had quite a bit. And what we've seen both in New York in this study and in other studies is where families who under-immunize or don't immunize their children are, then you can geographically map the outbreaks of disease, follow them, and spread to children in those places. In other words, as you know, I've said on other shows with you mm-hmm. that I think the reason to vaccinate your child is your child's health. Because as a parent, I know you're concerned about helping your child, and it's really for your child, and I don't even pay attention as much to the reasons of herd immunity or right. immunizing other people. But it is a factor, and if you look at these studies, not only do the children in vaccine refusal areas get disease, but they also do spread it to other people. So it does become a public health issue.
And so here we are with California joining West Virginia and Mississippi in saying that only medical exemptions will be honored for children entering school. It has sparked a lot of debate and conversation in those states. And we'll talk to the assemblyman coming up about why he wants New York State to line up with that. I didn't ask Dr. Weinberg to come on because Dr. Weinberg called me and said, this law, we should talk about this. In fact, I'm not even sure, Dr. Weinberg, did you even know about this proposal, this bill?
I probably shouldn't admit it, but no, I wasn't sure that I knew that it was in the works.
Okay.
I knew that New York had a religious objection. In fact, I helped review the state education guidelines for immunization just a year or two, so I'm familiar with the state guidelines. And we're fortunate, in my opinion, my personal opinion, medical professional opinion, not to be one of the states that allows philosophic or so-called scientific objections. But I would support, personally, and in my professional opinion, I would support repealing the religious objection.
Okay, so and that's what I wanted to ask you before I bring Patricia Finn into the conversation, because UR Medicine is not taking, URMC is not taking a sort of a public stance on this. They haven't been asked to. Perhaps they will going forward. It's still a relatively new proposal. And so what Dr. Weinberg is saying is not speaking for an entire organization.
This is my personal professional opinion.
Personal professional opinion.
As a specialist in vaccines and pediatric infectious diseases.
Okay, but when it comes to vaccine and religious exemption, do you compare vaccine to other laws, whether it's seatbelt, other things? Or is there another reason that you look at this and say, why not have a religious exemption for
vaccine? Well, in my mind, I do. I think that the problem with a religious exemption is that there really are no organized religions that take a firm stand on anti-vaccine. None of the major organized religions take a theological stance exactly against vaccination. And the law says that it's not that the law says you must vaccinate your child, although I fully believe that that's medically what you should do. The law says if you're going to go to a public school, you must vaccinate your child, both for your child's health and to keep down public injury from contagious diseases. This is similar to seatbelt laws. I mean, you can decide not to drive a car, and then you don't have to worry about seatbelts. But if you're in a car, seatbelts are a way to prevent damage to your child or car seat laws. And they also have this sort of public health additional benefit in that if there's, God forbid, if there's a terrible car wreck and your child is injured, the rest of society isn't paying for that long-term rehabilitation and medical care of your child when, with charity care through the hospital. So it seems to me there are precedents, although I'm not an attorney, it seems to me there are precedents for laws such as this.
We're talking to Dr. Jeffrey Weinberg, pediatric infectious disease specialist at UR Medicine's Golisano Children's Hospital. Let me bring in Patricia Finn, who works with families who have, I think in many ways, Patricia, I think it's important to ask you exactly what it is you
and
do.
And is an attorney.
And is an attorney, yes.
And me.
But I think it's important to ask you exactly what your firm aims to do and the kinds of families you do work with.
Well, we aim to protect the rights of the parents that we represent who want to refuse vaccines. We handle injury cases for children that have been damaged by vaccines, and they're not infrequent. The injuries are very, very serious, and they happen more than you think. The problem that I have with these discussions very often are that, people throw around all kinds of statistics and studies and, and basically scare people into either vaccinating or turning on their neighbor that doesn't want to vaccinate. And, eventually if you beat the studies long enough, they'll confess, right? So, some of the things that I'm hearing, they're not true at all. For example, on public radio recently, there was a statement made that 100 people had died from the measles case is out of Disneyland in California. Well, that's completely untrue. No one had died. These trends that the doctor had discussed, maybe they are existing, but when you're talking about 100% increase between two kids, you know, it's deceptive. Personally, I think that the vaccines do not work. They have not been effective, and that their risks outweigh any benefit, and that improvements in health have really been attributed to things like sanitation and refrigeration. And the California bill that popped up out of the blue, I don't think California was ready for that because they had enjoyed a philosophical exemption in that state, and they weren't necessarily organized. Here in New York, our legislators are far more educated because New York has been a hotbed for litigation and activism involving vaccine rights. And I will also point out that New York and New Jersey, Connecticut and West Virginia employ more pharmaceutical employees than any other states in the nation, and also require more shots for kids than any other states, and now they're, you know, trying to erode those rights. And just on a final point, there's absolutely no legal requirement that a person be a member of a particular faith that has a tenet contrary to vaccinating, and there are faiths such as Rastafarianism, Christian Science, etc. So there are many, many religions, but the courts have held, it's really a personal religious belief. And I represent many, many faiths, and at the end of the day, their beliefs are as valid as anyone else.
But they're not. But hold on a second, Patricia. We can say people have a right to religion, but bad ideas are bad ideas, right? I mean, I think it's okay to say Dr. Weinberg and I might not have the exact same religious background, but if a decision we're making with religion at the core is potentially impacting health or not of children, then we can talk about whether the ideas work or not. And I have to admit, Patricia, I wanted to have you on the program to understand some of the legal aspect, the arguments that parents make when they say they don't want their kids vaccinated. But I'm not comfortable with the notion of anyone coming on this program and saying vaccines don't work. It is wrong. It's okay to say that it is wrong, and it's okay to say that vaccines have worked. I'm not saying every vaccine has worked exactly the same way, but hand washing and sanitation, better than ever, definitely has had an impact. But the science is pretty clear on this. I don't think it's controversial anymore. And I guess I'm just curious to know why you don't trust science in that way, Patricia.
Well, let's talk about this science, right? There were 5,000 parents that filed claims that their children had been injured by Thimerosal and the vaccines. Their cases were all dismissed. They were dismissed based on research that the CDC has recently, or at least the scientists involved with the studies, have recently admitted was fraudulent. And according to the CDC's own scientists, that there was very clear evidence of a link between Thimerosal and autism.
No,
and that's not
that,
correct.
That is wrong.
It's
wrong.
Am I going to be that is very clear.
No,
what
it's
Dr.
not.
Thompson said
it's not.
Can I just finish? You asked.
I guess you can finish, Patricia. I'm sort of regretting this conversation already, but go ahead.
It's funny you say that because I was sort of regretting agreeing to come on, because I certainly represent a growing number of Americans who are refusing Big Pharma's assault upon their children. And you asked me what I thought about religion, and I told you there is no requirement in the law that a person be a member of a particular faith in order to get an exemption.
That's true.
And you rejected that, but you're not letting me tell you the other side. What the court did say is that there are some instances where the government can force people to vaccinate. And although that is a very old law from 1905, it is the law. And I'm not necessarily rejecting that. But what the court did say is prior to getting to that police power, you have to evaluate the necessity of the mandate, and that is not happening. Kids get 69 doses of vaccines in order to attend school for diseases that are either waned or benign and cause serious injuries. New York City mandates that toddlers get flu vaccines in order to go to school, and the CDC turned around and said the flu vaccine's not even effective. In the vaccine court, the greatest compensated injury above all other vaccines is for the flu. And all my clients are saying is that, you know, we have a right to protect our children. And if you can prove to me that injecting my child with something that could potentially kill them or seriously injure them, that I have to do this for the greater good, I don't think anybody would reject that. But to summarily suggest that these pharmaceutical companies that have been prosecuted for fraud, for lying, for bad drugs, that we have to accept what they're saying and inject babies with stuff that's being made in China and shipped to the United States is very, very troubling. And I'm sorry that you regret asking me.
I don't, Patricia. Listen, a couple of things here. It's important to have conversations that are broad-ranging and bring in a lot of viewpoints. The only thing I ever regret on this program is if bad information is spread far and wide. And when I hear someone say vaccines don't work in a blanket statement, that's bad information. Now, we can talk more about sort of the way the courts work, the way your work impacts families. And I'm not taking a position on whether religious exemptions should be banned. In fact, that's certainly not for me to decide. You also said that public radio reported 100 people died from measles in California. That's not what public radio reported. Public radio reported that 100 people were infected, and that is different.
I don't want to say the name of the reporter because it was an NPR. But if you'd like, I'll send you the link.
Patricia, I work for an NPR affiliate. I've been listening to reporting for months, and the reporting is there was an outbreak, and they were concerned about people who are not vaccinated. And all Dr. Weinberg said at the beginning of the program is when you have got pockets of people in the country who are not vaccinated, we are seeing more of these kind of outbreaks. Dr. Weinberg, is that true or wrong?
Hey, Dr. Weinberg said it. That's fine. Whatever.
Okay.
I'll send you the link after the show, and then you can, retract it.
NPR's not reporting that measles killed 100 people in California.
I did not say NPR.
Okay.
Public radio besides
that
NPR.
That is public.
Okay. Dr. Weinberg.
So, is that funny? Because PBS is another public radio or public media station.
Okay. But Patricia is an attorney, and she has the legal understanding to know the way the courts are working with this, that what is happening right now are that you've got families who want religious exemptions. Dr. Weinberg is saying he understands why and, in fact, personally supports the desire to remove religious exemptions. Before I bring in the assemblyman who has sponsored this bill, Dr. Weinberg, any response to what you've heard?
If I could just make a few responses, I don't want to preempt the assemblyman. But actually, Mary Baker Eddy, the founder of Christian Science, actually has been quoted on their website as saying, when they were quarreling about vaccination in 1901, she said, rather than quarrel over vaccination, I recommend if the law demand that an individual submit to this process, that he obey the law and then appeal to the gospel to save him from bad physical results. There are many papers that analyze different theologies. That is why I reference the saying that the major religions of the world, you can always find Islam, Christian denominations, Judaism, Buddhism, Jainism, Hinduism. Many religions of the world don't have a firm theologic stance. In fact, most of them think that the very act of a parent who is promoting health in their child outweighs any possible sin that goes along with it. Now, I'm not a theologian, so I'm going to stop there. Second rebuttal, the CDC has not at all said that thimerosal injured those children. In fact, there are many, many studies by the CDC, by the Europeans, by Scandinavians, by people independent of the vaccine industry that discount the thimerosal effects and even any vaccine effects on autism. Now, as she did mention correctly, the Supreme Court, as far back as 1907, the Supreme Court has twice declared that immunization can be made compulsory for the public good. And we have a vaccine, we have the VAERS system, a vaccine, the National Vaccine Compensation System. If a child, if a parent feels that the vaccine injured a child, there is a court-sanctioned method of going through each case, as she well knows, and people have been awarded damages if the vaccine may have affected the child. That's not an admission of guilt, but there are protections for our children in the very, very, very rare case of a vaccine injuring a child. The problem is any of these diseases for which we vaccinate are hundreds of times more dangerous. And in the last couple of years, we've had several kids die of pertussis who were unvaccinated or undervaccinated and that I've personally taken care of. And these diseases are precisely waning in many areas of the country because we vaccinate. And it's when we don't vaccinate that they come back. These are not diseases that are disappeared from the world. It only takes an airplane flight, as was shown in the measles epidemic, to bring measles back into the country.
Now, she said, Doctor, that vaccine injury is, quote, not infrequent. And you just said it's very rare.
It's very rare. There are many medical conditions. Well, it depends. If you're the one that you think it's injured, then it's not rare to you. That is correct. And I never say to a parent that I don't believe what they say or what their religion faith is. What I'm saying is, what I'm saying is that and to lump us all into the pharmacy, and I mean, to lump us all as being in the pocket of pharmaceutical companies, is as offensive as if I said all attorneys are criminal. They're obviously very fine attorneys, and there are obviously a few bad apples everywhere. And you can't say that all scientists and physicians who advocate for vaccine are in the, you can't even say that the pharmaceutical companies are criminal in this regard. They make a hell of a lot more money on other drugs than on vaccines.
Go ahead, Patricia, and then I want to bring in the assemblyman. Go ahead, Patricia.
Okay, there's certainly plenty of evidence of criminal conduct on the part of the pharmaceutical companies, so I reject that totally. I never stated that a doctor who recommends a vaccine is unethical, but the entire philosophy of the hospital where you practice, the amount of pharma funding that's coming in, is certainly influencing the doctors as well as the politicians in California that voted for the legislation. But, Doctor, I feel like this conversation is going nowhere, but I do want to ask you one question. If you're a parent and you live in New York City and you have a toddler and your doctor says, hey, you know, get the flu shot here. Your child needs this to go to school. And you don't really want to do it, but you're forced to take that shot because you have to go to work and you have to put your kid in school. And then your kid dies, or your kid develops a serious brain injury, or ends up in a wheelchair. And then you find out a few weeks later that that flu shot doesn't even work. Are you possibly suggesting, under any medically ethical standard, that that is acceptable in the United States?
I have seen more, personally, in my medical practice, I have seen more people injured by influenza disease than by influenza vaccine. And this is true for every vaccine we use, which are American-made, by the way, not imported from China.
That's incorrect, Doctor. They're absolutely imported from secret labs overseas. But that's not what I...
Secret
asked.
Labs, but how do
how
you
do
know?
How do we know about them if they're secret labs?
How do I know? Again, you know, I'll share with you. There's numerous FDA violations of these overseas labs. During the H1N1, another virus, flu form of virus vaccine, that was being made in a secret lab in Europe somewhere. Nobody knew about that. And then there was an emergency regulation. where we had to inject it into everybody. Everybody was going to die from H1N1.
I'd actually like to answer your question about how I would deal with a parent in New York City.
You never really answered my other question, though, about the parent.
That's what he would like to answer.
That's what I'd like to answer.
Go ahead, Doctor.
That's how I would like to answer that.
Yeah.
And the first thing is, and I do this a lot with parents who ask me about vaccines, the first thing is to see where they're coming from and what information they have, and to go through with them whether this is accurate information or inaccurate information. And you sit down with a person, you respect them as a person, I mean, by nature, parents want to do the best thing for their children, and I respect that. I'm a parent as well. And you go through and you provide information and go through the different, maybe go through the websites or books and their number of books and websites that are reputable. There are a number of sites that are that have false, undifferentiated, unproven science in them. And then we try and understand what are the exact objections and how can we work through this. And going through the cases, as I mentioned, cases of diseases that are far more deadly than the vaccines. And we try and come to an agreement. And that's exactly what I would do in New York City. And then if I or in New York State, or in any state of this country, or in any country of the world, in fact. And if I found that a child appeared to be ill after the vaccination, then I would try my medical scientific best to diagnose what the child had, because many children will end up with illnesses not caused by the vaccine, but that coincidentally come in at about the same age. And that is the whole problem with autism. Autism is generally diagnosed in the first couple years of life, when we are giving vaccine to children, when we are teaching them how to walk, when we are toilet training them. Nobody walks around saying that toilet training causes autism. I would be laughed out of the room, even by any parent, if I said that. But it's the same type of information gap that sometimes happens when things happen coincidentally, and they're scary things. These are scary diseases to parents, and they are, and it appears that they're linked. And so that's, I would have a long conversation and repeat the conversation several times with the parent if I needed to. And we would trade books, and I've done this, and I continue to do this.
And you'd search for the best evidence you could find.
I would give them the best evidence, and I have stacks of it here. You can see me. I brought it. I didn't know if I would need it or not, but I have stacks of it with me here.
All right. So, Patricia, that's the doctor's response. Is that unsatisfactory to you?
Yes, because, you know, simply when people disagree, you know, there's always an attack. And you did not answer my question. It was not, I didn't ask you if you've seen people seriously injured by vaccines. I asked you, what if you were the parent whose child died from the flu shot and then you found out that the flu shot didn't work?
I don't think I've ever met a parent, nor do I think any exist.
And moreover, there are no studies. There have been 10 studies done. Four of them have been totally discredited. Dr. Thompson, CDC whistleblower statements, and then we have the famous Scandinavian studies that you mentioned of Dr. Paul Thorsen, who I will mention is one of the FBI's 10 most wanted fugitives. And
these
he
are not the studies
with
I mentioned.
Millions in research funding for autism and thimerosal connections. His research, as well as Dr. Thompson's research, were both used in the Court of Federal Claims to dismiss 5,000 cases of autism caused by vaccines. And then to conclude, I will point out to the Simpson-Wood conference where CDC and Merck officials convened, and they clearly discussed a link, a well-established link between thimerosal and autism.
No, can
and
we stop with this? No.
Further
Patricia, you are not citing solid science here. And this program has a high standard for science. I can't.
I'm posting away on my wall. So anybody who wants to see the science Or even, how about the transcript? How about I give you the transcript of the Simpson meeting, and I'll put it on my wall, and then you can verify.
And the person she was referring to earlier, Gwen Ifill, misspoke on PBS and said that 100 people had died of the measles, and Gwen Ifill retracted that statement, that is one example, a tiny example of a misreported misstatement that was corrected. I would like to bring in the Assemblyman Jeffrey Dinowitz, who has been waiting patiently on the line with us from the Bronx. He has sponsored a bill that would make religious exemption illegal in this state if you want to send your kid to school. And Assemblyman Dinowitz is on the line with us now. How are you, sir?
I'm well. How are you today?
Okay. I want to get your perspective on why you're putting forward this bill right now. We've been hearing from Dr. Jeff Weinberg that even with a doubling of the number of religious exemption requests across much of New York State, it still amounts to maybe 0.5% or less. And I want to hear from you as to why you think that this kind of legislation is necessary right now.
We have more and more schools in New York that have percentages of immunization below the recommended percentage. There are several schools in my own district where lots and lots of kids, sometimes I think as much as 25%, are not immunized. And what that means is that the chances of a large number of kids contracting one of these horrible diseases is increased by a significant amount. California recently, as you know, eliminated a religious exemption. We would still have an exemption for medical purposes. Obviously, no one should be vaccinated if it will harm their children. And people who have cancer, for example, some people in that situation can't get immunized. But the bottom line is that by more and more people choosing not to get their children immunized, and it's still a very low percentage, thank goodness, it increases significantly the chances of an outbreak. Fortunately, in California, there were no deaths because of the measles outbreak. But I think it was a warning that we have to take very seriously that there are different that there are parents out there, and I'm not going to characterize their motives or anything else, except I think they're wrong. And what they do with their children affects other children. It affects other children, especially the children who can't be immunized. And as a result, I think we as legislators have to do what's best for our constituents, what's best for the people in New York, and we have to fight to protect lives. And since the science is settled when it comes to vaccinations. You know, there are some things that people can argue about. Some people don't think the world is round. Others don't believe in evolution. Others think that climate change doesn't exist, or if it does, it's not people-made. There are things that are settled. Those things are settled, and the effectiveness of vaccinations are also settled.
All right, so here's a headline just pointed out to me from Ithaca, New York. Despite the efforts of local officials, vaccination rates for some Ithaca schools are significantly lower than both the New York State and national averages. And Ithaca is looking at around 72% vaccination for measles compared to the average rate of 95% for the state at large. So right, there are places where there are lower rates of immunization. But, Assemblyman Dinowitz, you have parents saying, this feels like the government telling me what I can and can't do with my children's body, and that doesn't feel good to me. What do you say to that?
The legislation, if enacted, would mandate that your child has to be vaccinated if you want to send them to school. There are some people who homeschool their kids. I'm not suggesting that. What I am suggesting is that we have to look at the larger picture. If you don't want your child vaccinated, then don't have your child come into contact with any other child. That's what I say to them. I understand the concerns people have, and I'm not minimizing those concerns, but I do think that if a child is not vaccinated, they could conceivably pose a threat to other children, including those who can't get vaccinated, including those who are too young to get vaccinated, and others. And we have to protect people.
Okay, but
and considering the science is settled, I don't really see what the controversy should be all about.
But what are we going to do with parents who don't have vaccinations? Their kids are not vaccinated, but they send their kids to school. You pull them out of school? That's what the law is going to say?
That's already what the law says. Excuse me.
If they don't have the religious exemption or for a medical exemption, can't go to school.
Okay.
That is correct. The school immunization law as it stands is you know, for people who are just behind and who wish to vaccinate, they have a grace period. But removing the religious exemption, as I understand it, sir, it would be transparent. They can also homeschool their children, but the current state education law also says that if you homeschool and the child is not immunized, the schools do have a right to keep them from coming to school for testing purposes, athletic events, etc. And I believe that the bill would leave that unchanged.
Is that right?
May I jump in here?
Go ahead, Patricia. Yeah, you're hearing from Patricia Finn. She is a vaccine rights lawyer, and a firm is a vaccine injury and exemption litigation firm. Go ahead, Patricia.
Thank you kindly. First of all, there isn't a single school in New York City that has a less than 97% vaccine compliance rate, because the city of New York has quotas, and those quotas are unconstitutional and have resulted in multiple legitimate exemptions being declined. So that is an inaccurate statement. As for the comment,
the school I don't think that my children went to currently have a 94% vaccination rate.
Okay, hold on. Assemblyman, let her go.
Shed the illnesses to other children. So it's not the non-vaccinated that pose the risk. It's actually the children that are vaccinated. They shed the diseases for up to 28 days. So if you're looking at a policy as to excluding children, you really should be excluding the ones that have been immunized, because they are shedding and spreading the infection.
All right, can we let a doctor jump in? Because I do. It's important for me to let the science speak here. That there's a doctor in the studio.
That's not true.
Go ahead.
There is. I don't understand what shedding you're talking about. There's none of the vaccines that school children are getting are shed. Most of the vaccines that are killed, well, the killed inactivated vaccines, there's zero shedding because it's not a live agent. Agents such as varicella, measles, mumps, rubella, rotavirus are sometimes shed, certainly not for 28 days. The longest would be rotavirus, which is only given in infancy. So these are not school-required vaccines. And we don't use live attenuated poliovirus in this country, so that wouldn't be a requirement. Actually, I have data. I'm sure the assemblyman does as well. But the data that were just published from the National Immunization Survey that separate out New York City, New York as a whole, and New York rest of state. And I see in New York City, 88.7% of children had one or more Tdap vaccines. That's less than 95%. 86.8% had had less than one meningococcal conjugate vaccine, and they're even lower. They're lower figures for other types of vaccines.
All right. So does that clear some of those questions up for you, Patricia?
No, it's incorrect. The city of New York has authored evidence that they maintain a compliance rate of 97%, and there's a host of data that shows that exemptions are wrong.
Okay, so you don't accept those numbers. How about the shedding? We just heard from the doctor explaining to you.
Shedding, I'm reading right now the vaccine insert from Merck.
Of which vaccine?
The MMR vaccine, and I'm looking at Sanofi Pasteur. And their inserts, they both indicate that the vaccine can be shed for up to 28 days and recommend against vaccinated children coming into contact with pregnant mothers or others. So these exclusionary laws putting children out of school do not work. More importantly, this entire concept of herd immunity is a joke, because everybody in the entire world would have to be vaccinated in order to create the immune or herd effect that these legislative mandates are basing, you know, they're based upon. And it's ridiculous. What about this? What about the milk delivery guy or the mailman or the bus driver, the parents that are in and out of this school? It makes no sense at all. If you're going to exclude anyone, you should exclude the children that are vaccinated.
Dr. Weinberg?
Well, this is very unusual backwards thinking. The herd immunity has been proven, but you can't just lump herd immunity in for everybody. You have to look at the condition. For example, we don't even talk about herd immunity for tetanus because that's not a contagious illness. Herd immunity, where it's been studied the best, for example, for measles, it's very clear that you need to maintain in the mid 90%, 95% of immunity to prevent an outbreak. The concept of herd immunity is not going to keep you from one infection. It's to prevent the mathematical dissemination of an outbreak. It's a calculation done depending on how virulent the bug is, the pathogen is, and what the immunity is. The milkman, the paper man, the grandparents, they're generally already immune because they've either been vaccinated already or they're older and they've had the natural disease, which has led to them immunity. So it's really a non-issue to be talking about all these other people, and it's essentially a non-issue to be talking about excluding vaccinated people. And you don't have to have the whole world immunized. I would love to have the whole world immunized against all childhood diseases because I don't want to see any child suffer.
I think for people who did not grow up with things like polio, it's easy now to sort of think that there's some sort of evil cabal going on here because it's pretty easy for us. We don't get to see polio. We don't even see chickenpox anymore. I mean, I had chickenpox as a kid. And so I wonder if that is part of thinking here.
Some of the fears that parents voice to me that are precisely that. There's a natural fear of, you know, a vaccination is sticking a needle into your child with a medical compound in it. And people don't understand that the reason we haven't seen these diseases for a while is precisely because the vaccines have protected us. But these things are not gone from the world other than smallpox and the veterinary disease Rinderpest, which were both eliminated by vaccination. Measles and California is a perfect example of that. If one person comes into the country with measles, then that virus is going to find whoever's unimmunized or underimmunized, does not have either native protection or vaccine-given protection, and they will start an outbreak. And that happens time and time again. It happens all over New York every couple of years with pertussis. It's happened with varicella. It's happened with mumps downstate, as I'm sure the assemblyman knows and you know, being downstaters. It's happened with innumerable diseases.
Patricia, does that clear up our questions on herd immunity?
Other than, you know, characterizing my point as ridiculous, and again, you know, a very non-specific answer. In New York City, you can't even get a titer waiver for a polio vaccine. And let me just explain what that means. Because most people test positive for a polio immunity, whether or not they've received the vaccine, the city of New York will not allow you to escape that vaccination by getting a blood test, because the blood test will predominantly show positive. There's a host of evidence, and I don't want to, you know, get everybody upset here, that shows the what was described as polio-caused paralysis in the 50s was actually being caused by pesticides that were widely used at the same time. When the pesticides were removed or abated, these mysterious cases of polio paralysis also waned.
Polio wasn't real?
Later. Can I finish?
Dr. Weinberg, is that right? No, this is an important point. I've definitely never heard this.
I just heard Diane Rehm, so they were just describing about polio 5 minutes before Evan's radio program started. This notion that we have all these other things that are really the cause rather than the microorganisms is just not correct.
You have to believe there's a conspiracy.
The reason I go to New York City and don't worry about polio is because the kids are vaccinated, and we've eliminated polio from the Western Hemisphere precisely because of vaccination campaigns that have been going on ever since the Salk and Sabin vaccines were developed.
How do you explain the positive titers for children who've never received
because,
the vaccine?
Because mothers give...
Why is it that the city of New York will not allow a titer or a blood test as a substitute for that shot, but they will for others.
I don't know the city of New York policy right now, so I will admit that.
One is stick to what pharma is paying for and putting out there and not consider these other possibilities.
But I can tell you that the reason there's no polio in New York.
And the piping of the water with lead, because they thought that was in the good of the people. And it led to social decline, ill health, and the Dark Ages. And the Romans, they thought that lining the aqueduct with lead was a good thing. And I think in 100 years from now, people are going to look back at vaccines and think, oh my gosh, what were we doing to these children? And it's very likely that a reckless mandate with these shots being manufactured who knows where could actually trigger an outbreak, which I would put my money on is what happened in California.
It's not what happened in California, Patricia. There are certain things that aren't mysterious, but let me at least say this. I think everybody wants what's best for our kids. I really do. I think we all want healthy kids, strong families, strong societies, and eradication of disease. I'm trusting the science, and you've got to believe that there is a really organized cabal here, going back decades, including journalists, including scientists, including researchers, that everybody's in on this, because I don't know a single reputable reporter who comes out and says that what Patricia is telling us is true. Because we know, unfortunately, on her side, a lot of what we were hearing is misinformation. I'm open to new evidence, but I don't know why we think it is a conspiracy. If you trust the science to fly in an airplane, okay, you're going to get in an airplane. The companies that make airplanes make a lot of money, but nobody thinks that they're evil. Because the science works, the planes fly.
Why do you have to characterize my statements as conspiratorial or evil? This is the life.
Nobody said evil.
People are consuming 25 million pills an hour. Every three commercials on television is another drug. I do not trust the pharmaceutical companies.
If I can word it.
Assemblyman Denimitz, go ahead. Yes, please.
It is well settled that the polio vaccine was one of the most incredibly effective things that ever happened in this country, saving countless lives, saving countless people from being disabled. I think one of the biggest diseases, one of the biggest epidemics we face in this country is the epidemic of anti-science that's taking place among certain individuals or certain groups, and it has really gotten totally out of hand. For anybody that suggests that the polio vaccine is not a good thing is totally beyond the pale. And that is true with some of these other vaccines. You have to look at the science. I trust science.
Well,
science is settled in this matter, and hopefully legislatively we can do something to protect kids from people who think they're protecting their own kids but really aren't.
All right, so you've been hearing from Assemblyman Jeffrey Dinowitz, who is on the line with us. He has sponsored a bill that would ban religious exemptions for vaccines. Assemblyman, before we let you go, what are your colleagues saying about this? Right now, only three other states that I know of have banned religious exemptions for vaccines. What are your colleagues saying, and what do you expect to happen going forward?
I think there is going to be significant support. I can never predict the outcome of a bill, but I think most people will agree with my position on this. This is banning a religious exemption is not anti-religion. Banning a religious exemption is banning exemptions from people, many of whom are using the religious exemption as for their own, basically a personal exemption, which is what California had. And I think that people are going to see, especially given the recent measles outbreak in California, that this is something which is going to save lives of their own constituents and their own kids. And I got to tell you that since I've introduced the bill, I've gotten huge outpouring of support, but I must say there have been people on Twitter and in other forums, I mean fanatics, if you will, that have said that I want to cause autism. One person said they hope that my two little grandchildren get autism. Others have made the false claim that I'm getting huge contributions from Big Pharma. And you know, I realize that they only represent a very small slice of the people who oppose vaccinations, but there are certainly a fair number of fanatics who are basing their opinions on anything but science.
Assemblyman, it has been an interesting hour, and I do appreciate you taking the time and your patience with us this hour. Thank you for coming on the program.
Thank you very much.
Assemblyman Jeffrey Dinowitz joining us. Patricia Finn has hung up on us. I would say thanks to her for her time. She's a vaccine rights lawyer. Her firm lists itself as a vaccine injury and exemption litigation firm. I think she does, and I think we all want what's best for kids. You heard a lot of misinformation on this hour, and we tried to correct it as best we could. And I am not in anybody's pocket. I believe in good science and good information, and Dr. Jeffrey Weinberg, I'm going to try to defer to people much smarter than me. You're one of them. Thank you for taking the time to come in here, and I really do appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Evan.
Dr. Jeffrey Weinberg is a pediatric infectious disease specialist at UR Medicine's Golisano Children's Hospital. Short break. Let's change gears. Next on Connections.